Welcome to the afternoon session. I'll begin by announcing some disappointing news for those who do not already know it. Our initial speaker, Phil Carley, is unable to come today. He is ill and in Rochester, and we all wish him the best. As you know, Phil appeared in 2007 at the annual conference, Mechanical Music for the Rich and Famous, Orchestrions, Pittsburgh Plutocrats, and Musical Culture. We regret he's not able to come here and talk about slicing up Madame a Butterfly, so today is un mal di. So our remaining participants have gratefully agreed to fill in the space that Phil was not able to fill himself. And I want to first of all ask if anybody needs an introduction to our participants. They are Michael Beale, Dennis Rooney, and Seth Winner. I can give you off the top of the head biographies, but because we are so limited in time, I'll decide to forego those, and if anybody wants to know their particulars, please come and ask them who they are after the end of the session. That's right. So, without much further ado, we're going to begin with Mike Beale talking about the history of early record sleeves. And Michael's recording equipment is ready, and we are ready for Michael. Oh, well, does anybody have a tune they want to hear?
She's starting the recording equipment in the other room.
That's what happens when you don't have an extra backup. You got to rely on somebody else. Anyway, I'm going to sit down, I think, and wait for things to happen.
Yeah. Thank you. Aha, here she comes.
Here she comes.
That's a clock. Okay. Ready on the right? Ready on the left?
Let's do this.
Okay.
Cameras, everything?
Yeah, yes, it should be. In the beginning, Berliner created the disc. It was round and firm and fully packed and naked. Yes, Berliner forgot to create the record sleeve. Or maybe he didn't. Kurt Nock and Mike Sherman illustrate this one example from 1894, and they report there were two other similar ones from the same source. Considering that the earlier 5-inch discs often had the lyrics printed on a paper glued to the back of the disc where it could not be read while it was playing, this shows that a sleeve would have been an obvious solution. But its lonely existence, come on guys, but its lonely existence shows that they didn't seem to follow up with more. However, the 7-inch Russian dealer sleeve might possibly date from 1899, and none other like it have been reported. A few unprinted sleeves with no label hole have shown up, but these might be of European origin. Researching the early history of the record sleeve turned out to be a much more difficult chore than I thought it would be. That could be why no one else had really done it. The one exception was Michael Korenthal, who surprisingly got very close to the truth and gave me a couple of clues and a false lead that you will see. But I thought it would be so easy, so while I prepared for an operation in Kentucky, I sent my trusted research assistant, Leah Beale, to the New York Public Library to find the answer. And I started getting plaintive phone calls back from her telling me that what I told her to find wasn't there. I want to reassure her again that the call the day after the operation was not what put me into respiratory arrest and a coma. I woke up 3 days later on Groundhog Day with a blizzard going on outside, and I want to credit her fully with actually finding the missing answer a couple of months later. You'll see that also. I did this project because I was angry. You might remember that a few years back, I did a full debunking of the myth that Alex Steinweiss invented the illustrated album cover. I had been further annoyed that they also created a myth that before Steinweiss, all records were housed in plain brown or green sleeves. They had misinterpreted his observation of the album pockets, but even that was wrong, at least for early Victor albums. But considering their misunderstanding, what new collectors see are mainly aftermarket sleeves. But originally in the stores, perhaps 85% or more 78s came in printed sleeves, at least after 1910. I won't have time to do more than just hint at those later years. A slideshow of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sleeves will have to wait. But when I said that there were illustrated or at least printed sleeves after 1910, I started to wonder if I could document what there was before 1910, and that's what I'll attempt to do today. As I started to ask around to the experts if they had ever seen a Berliner sleeve or any other from the 1890s, the one from 1894 was all that really turned up. Did they just stack the discs up and ship them out naked? That turned out to be the case. Not just for Berliner, but for all the others in the 1890s, and also for Victor and Columbia and all the others after the turn of the century. Every picture of a record store or warehouse from that first decade after 1900 that I've ever seen shows discs on the shelves or racks naked. And here are several stores and photos and drawings from the Talking Machine world in 1907 and 1908. And the Columbia Record pictured their finest New York City record departments in May 1904. Now, the month before they showed all of these pictures, they showed a window display with record cases. Victor is also known to have produced cases with slots and drawers for 7-inch discs from the beginning in 1901. And even Berliner had marketed record cases, so the customer could put their discs in these cases, but this was not a solution for the dealers and jobbers. My curiosity started about 20 years ago in an antique store, Post Arsk, with Fred Williams, when he spotted a box of Stereopticon slides that he knew was this 1908 tour of Sears Roebuck in Chicago. Now put on your 3D glasses. He knew that number 10 was this amazing stereo slide of an aisle in the Talking Machine department with endless shelves of naked blue label Oxfords. Hawthorne and Schiebel and Syracuse Wire Works made some dandy dealer racks, and all the discs are naked. There even were cases and racks for use and homes for the customers' collections when they outgrew the small handheld case, and all the records are shown unsleeved. On the other hand, cylinders are in their padded and printed tube boxes, of course. Cylinders are fragile. But even they started naked, but they were in peg boxes from the very beginning. And even after they were boxed, they still sold these peg boxes. When Victor illustrated introduced the luxurious cabinet Victrola in 1906, it provided albums. But according to the Victor data book, at first they were not really albums with pockets as we know them. They were boxes with divider sheets. Records and sleeves could be put in here as well as in the carrying case, but so could naked discs. I was surprised to see this box with the metal clasps at the edge as a Victor product, because I have one of these somewhere and I never really thought that highly of it. I need to unearth it. Albums with pockets, as we know them, were not introduced by Victor until 1909, when two of their distributors introduced them. Now, there, however, had already been British companies offering them in 1907. And there even were six operas and illustrated albums in the later aught years in Europe. As a sidebar, I started to wonder how a customer would receive his purchase to take home if the records were stacked and shelved naked. If they hadn't invented sleeves, they probably also had not yet invented the carry bag. For that matter, how were any purchases handled to a purchaser back then? The answer appears to be bundles. There would either be sheets of wrapping paper or newspaper or on a giant roll of wrapping paper with a rod with a tear-off blade. The product would then be wrapped on the counter and then tied with a cotton thread, like some bakeries still do. You could see the wrapping sheets in this Chinatown store. But I've yet to see a picture of a record store with a sales wrapping counter visible. But this ad shows a jobber preparing a shipment. He's wrapped the horn and is working on wrapping a box of cylinders, and there are two naked discs there ready for their diapering. This is how items would be carried home from the store by the customer. Now, this will come up again in a few minutes, but how were records shipped in bulk? While the corrugated cardboard box had been invented around 1895, some say in Brooklyn, I think they were using wooden crates, as shown here. Now, we know that phonographs were shipped in wooden crates. Victor crate sides are collector's items. The machines were sometimes strapped or bolted into the crates. But what about loose records? They may have been packed in wood shavings, wood wool, or otherwise known as Excelsior. No, not that Excelsior, this stuff. After all, if it's okay for fine wines, it should be okay for records. They might also have packed them in barrels. And there was a store window that was described that they said that we had barrels of records in the sign above, several barrels of records. Now, actually, the first two uses of record sleeves are very well known and are required practically no research. Now, this is partially true because I've not found contemporary comments about them. But we all know about them. These are the Victor packagings for the first series of Melba and Tamaño records in 1904. For firsts, they were remarkably modern and sophisticated. They're hard pasteboard with a pebbled paper glued on it, black for Melba, red for Tamaño. Gold lettering and signature, and what is most remarkable for a first item of its kind, a picture of the performer is revealed through the celluloid-covered label hole when the record is removed. Now, all reported copies of the Tamaño sleeve show this picture. Now, this is what was revealed when the Melba record was removed. Now, there are at least two pictures of Nellie Melba. Here's the first one. Da-da-dum, da-da-dum-dum, da-da-da-dum, da-dum. Leah, have you been in my file of what the butler saw?
No, and if I had, Tamaño would have looked like this.
You see, this is what was going on in the phonograph and peep show arcades. One half was listening to this, and the other half was watching this. The movie archivists over at EMEA have all the fun. Yes, there are two different poses of Nellie Melba. There are also two different sleeves for Tamaño, because when Tamaño suddenly died in 1905, they had to remove the slogan that said he was under contract for Victor for life. But the picture remained the same. It's important to make the distinction that these are artist-specific sleeves, not record-specific. The individual titles and catalog numbers are not indicated on the sleeve, only the artist, the label, and the price. Now, the next use of sleeves was less well known. When the softer surface Columbia Marconi Velvetone records were released in 1907, they were sleeved in a special sleeve with Marconi's picture and a ridiculous slogan, "Wonderful is wireless." There was a viewing hole on the front and another of the same size on the unrecorded back. But except for a Spanish language series, the records were single-sided. But the other side was a special textured back to grip the turntable with a large label with information and instructions. Because the rear hole was regular size, it was not readable until it was removed. You wonder why they bothered with the second hole unless it was easier to manufacture this way. Just as there are two slightly different views of Marconi's hair on the label, there are two different views on the sleeve as well, and I haven't been able to come up when I was putting this together with the different versions. Now, these sleeves are not even artist-specific. They're label-specific. The first example of what collectors call generic label sleeves. Now, when I sent Leah to find documentation for this project, I knew about these sleeves, and I expected that there would be mention of them in the trade press, especially the Marconis. And they actually say practically nothing about the whole Marconi project other than announcing it before issue. Nobody seemed to be saying anything about the record sleeves. No mention of it being done, no mention of the availability of sleeves in the aftermarket advertisements. But like we've seen, a lot of pictures of stores and ads for racks all showing naked records until Leah spotted this. Since Arthur D. Greisler came to Chicago in February last, that would be 1906, to take charge of the Talking Machine Company, he has made some very aggressive moves, which have had the effect of immensely increasing the wholesale business of the company entirely, of eliminating the retail business of the company entirely, including the mail order business, which amounted to something like $15,000 alone. The Talking Machine Company are exclusive Victor distributors and continually carry a stock of 100,000 Victor records. Wouldn't you love those? I should explain that anyone could be a Victor dealer in those days, and to be a jobber or distributor, which were the companies that supplied dealers, any dealer could be a jobber or distributor. Most jobbers were both, and this gave their retail branch an advantage of getting the new stuff directly from the factory. And it earned them the suspicion of the dealers they serviced if some new items were slow in arriving. Anyway, that's not the important part. This is. As soon as a record is received from the factory, it is placed in a special envelope and sealed. So it is never used before shipping, and the dealer is assured of a perfectly fresh record. The envelopes, of course, are cut out so as to expose the label of the record. Eureka! Of course, Leah couldn't shout this out at the library, but she did nudge me and pointed enthusiastically at this. It proved that Victor, and presumably the other companies, were shipping their records from the factory naked. It also showed us that we had been using the wrong word. They weren't sleeves. In the industry, they were called envelopes. And that, as Groucho Marx would say to a contestant, is the secret void.
Really?
You bet your life. Yes, Leah and I have been keeping this as a secret for 4 years. The title of this presentation should really be The History of Early Record Envelopes. They weren't sleeves. We've been looking for the wrong word. Now, if our sources had been online at that time and we used the search function for sleeves, we would have come up blank. Plug in envelope and bang, But actually, we were using the hard copies of the journals 4 years ago. And thus, we found it. But it really wasn't a secret. It was in front of us all the time. It was there in many places. For example, look at this ordinary Victor Batwing label of the style used between 1913 and 1917. It says right there, "This record is licensed in USA for use only and only under the conditions printed on the Victor Company's envelope containing it. No license is granted if the record is not delivered in the envelope containing said conditions. See conditions." Now, it even shows up in late repressings. One of the problems I have with the use of the word envelope is that I consider an envelope to envelop the item and thus have a flap that would close the opening off. The first Talking Machine Company envelope might have had this. Now, right next to the article in Talking Machine World, staring us right in the face so we wouldn't miss the story next to it, was this ad for the Talking Machine Company discussing and picturing one of those envelopes. So here you see an actual photograph of the front of one of their envelopes. This is how your records would look if you get them from us. As soon as received from the factory, they are placed in an envelope and sealed. The seal is not broken until, in selling a customer, you break it. Now look at the headline, all in an envelope, and the logo at the bottom of the ad. That curious X could be a representation of the rear construction of the envelope, including the sealable flap. For the next year, even when not picturing or promoting envelopes, they continued to use that X in their ads, although they finally condensed it and moved it to the side off of any of the lettering. But it made their ads easy to spot and reminded you of the sealable envelope. As there are apparently no printing on these envelopes, they may have disappeared completely. But just maybe you may have spotted one of them in your collections. If you have, let me know if you ever come across one. Now, although this ad and article was in the August 15th, 1906 issue, ads continued to appear for racks showing naked discs. And nothing further was said about the matter of envelopes for months until the November 15th issue. Now, finally, there was this first advertisement ever for aftermarket envelopes. It was from a Boston Victor distributor, M. Steinert and Sons. "Jobbers and dealers in disc records, do you use envelopes? Our envelopes are used by 75% of the largest jobbers. Their superiority is proved by the number of duplicate orders we receive. 10 different styles and sizes, samples and prices on application." Now, it's difficult to authenticate any examples of these 1906 sleeves or envelopes. Some of these might be this early, but as you will see, the jobbers and dealers had to continue this practice for several more years. The record companies themselves are still shipping out their records naked. And Talking Machine World had decided to editorialize about it. Following up on complaints that the Eastern Jobbers Association had made in the summer of 1906, the December 15, 1906 issue of Talking Machine World stated, "Leading jobbers have requested the manufacturers of disc records to use envelopes for the standard line, the same as is done with high-priced goods. Those broaching this matter propose to have the associations take this matter up and thereby formulate an official request, as it were, for what is spoken of as a very desirable improvement. As it is, a number of jobbers are enveloping their discs at their own expense, and they believe the manufacturers should do this so that they would have a uniform and distinctive cover that the public would learn to look upon as a guarantee of genuineness even if an additional charge is made. With that in mind, what, if anything, would have been printed on the envelope being supplied by jobbers? Jobber identification would be confusing to the consumer of a customer of a specific dealer. So if some dealers are buying their own, perhaps they could have looked like these. But why was this such an important matter to jobbers and dealers? Records were being damaged when they were shipped to them in those Excelsior-filled wooden crates. Now, envelopes reduced this damage when the records were shipped from the jobber to the dealer and then to the customer, but they could not reverse what had already happened from the factory to the jobber. The jobbers at major dealers continued to take the lead, and many of them were now advertising this to dealers in the trade press. In February 1907, it was reported that the Rudolph Wurlitzer Company of Cincinnati puts every disc in an envelope, and they found it as something that the customer more than appreciates. They explained this further in April. The plan of the Wurlitzer Company in placing each Victor record in a separate envelope, thus minimizing the danger of the records being scratched or otherwise damaged, has met with hearty endorsement of both dealers and customers, especially the former. When a dealer can offer an enveloped record to a customer, the latter feels sure that it has not been played over for demonstrating purposes or otherwise abused, and is likely to confine his purchases to the store offering such assurance. It also means that the dealer will have a smaller accumulation of damaged or unsaleable stock. Another jobber in Cleveland, the Eclipse Musical Company, advertised every Victor record placed in an envelope when received from the factory. Advertising pays because later in that same May 15th issue is this article. The Talking Machine World's representative was shown through the offices and stockrooms where a large series of shelves had been arranged, where each Victor record is placed in an envelope and laid at flat as soon as received, which keeps them in perfect condition and prevents their warping. But the envelope wars were escalating. Just enveloping the stock as received from the Victor factory was not enough. Wurlitzer of Chicago and Cincinnati now pneumatically cleaned them. Vital importance. Did you know that grit, which gathers in a record groove, chokes the reproduction, eliminates the finer notes, shortens the life of the record by one half, cuts your profits by damaging your stock? Pneumatically cleaned records in envelopes. Our entire stock is cleaned by subjecting the surface of each record to the action of a pneumatic brush, which has a suction power of 25 pounds, cleaning out the minute grooves which no cloth can reach. In September 1908, the Eastern Talking Machine Company of Boston, both jobbers and retail dealers, advertised that they kept their two stocks separate, and that we originated the system of supplying high-grade red seal records in sealed envelopes. This is appreciated by dealers in Victor records. Victor, however, still resisted shipping their records in envelopes from the factory, despite pressure being put on them in 1906 by the Talking Machine World and the Jobbers Association, and at the July 22, 1907 meeting of the National Association of Talking Machine Jobbers. A member asked if the Victor Talking Machine Company had taken any action relative to the grievance filed regarding their providing special envelopes to obviate the breakage of records. It was pointed out that the jobbers had lost considerable through the breakage of records, and that the company had ample time to rectify the same. Secretary Jacot explained that the Victor people had taken the matter under advisement and had promised to give the subject early attention but to date nothing had been done. Secretary Jacot also was instructed to communicate with the company again and draw their attention to the great loss sustained and also the patience displayed, a year having elapsed since the association made its request for the reforms noted. Yet another year later, at the August 16, 1908 meeting of the Executive Committee of the National Association of Talking Machine Jobbers, the committee again reminded the victor officials of the former resolutions, impressing upon the company the importance of shipping records from the factory, suitably protected from injury by the use of an envelope or other covering. While they were not in a position to commit themselves, the company explained that they realized the advantage of doing so, but were not yet prepared to handle the matter in a way that it would be satisfactory. But they would still bear the matter in mind. The objections to the present method of sending victor records without this protection lies principally in the fact that the jobbers are forced to take the initiative in this respect. The jobbers also objected to the competition which might result in enclosing victor records in gold-plated envelopes as an inducement to get the business. Well, maybe not gold-plated like this 1946 Victor Heritage Series sleeve designed by ARSC member, the late Wilfred Graham, but within the month, Columbia Records laid down the gauntlet, which soon forced Victor's hand in at least one matter. On September 10th, 1908, Columbia announced that from that point on, all their records would be double-sided. And to top that off, quote, each record will be enclosed in an envelope, ensuring protection from scratch and dust. Now, this is that envelope. Since March 1908, Columbia had been the American manufacturer for the Italian Fonotipia operatic records. In fact, it was pressure from that Italian company that forced Columbia into the double disc business because Fonotipia had expected two-sided pressings like they had been producing in Europe. This grand opera envelope was also introduced on September 10, 1908, when the Fonotopia and the Columbia Symphony series also became double discs. There has been some speculation that the Grand Opera envelope may have been really issued on the occasion of the famous Grand Opera series of 1903, like this owner would like to imagine. But it should be pointed out that this envelope is most often seen as a 12-incher, and the 1903 series was strictly 10-inch discs. The printing is the same size on the 10 and the 12s. Look at the distance to the edges on this 12-inch sample. We know that these are what were being used because in mid-1909, the Columbia Record reprinted the guarantee. And to remind the dealers, we printed on every Columbia double disc envelope. Feature it. It will sell Columbia records to new customers, and it will hold your regular customers. Both of these envelopes continued to be used by Columbia for 4 years, until this announcement was made in December 1912 of the issue of the Columbia Record. Columbia dealers will be glad to learn that we are adapting a uniform style of heavy envelopes for all records regardless of price. Except for the small quantity left in stock, we have abandoned the lightweight manila envelopes, which have been used up to the present time on the lower priced record. The new envelope is made of a specially prepared heavy green paper, appropriately printed with advertising advantages on the back, and we look for a substantial increase in record sales as a result of the new container. These envelopes will also take the place of our present Grand Opera envelopes when that supply is exhausted. In no circumstances is it our Is it our intention to supply these envelopes free, except one with the purchase of each record? Dealers who want any extra supply of these envelopes, however, can obtain them from the distributors at a nominal rate. I believe that this is that replacement sleeve. But this time, the reverse was not blank. They continually changed the reverse. But back in 1908, the one matter that Columbia had forced Victor's hand on was double-sided records. Whereas Columbia had enthusiastically announced a list of 700 double discs, Victor was very reluctant in announcing 125 records to their dealers. There was no matching announcement that they would produce envelopes like Columbia. To the contrary, they announced that they had to replace the patent and condition sticker that had been on the blank reverse side with this new label format, which reduced the information to 5 lines of very small type, later reduced to 3 lines. Now, it was not until the arch or batwing label of 1913 that they finally referred to the envelope. Now, this is not to say that they were not providing envelopes between 1909 and 1913. For it does seem that the complaints that the jobbers' conventions had ceased. These are some of the envelopes that could have been of a type between those years, but this is the envelope that accompanied the mention of the envelope on the batwing label. It's not been accurately dated as to when Victor had started those previous ones. The guarantee that is information that is on there, we've seen dates from 1913 and 1915. On the other hand, the envelope that Michael Klorenthal had pictured from Larry Holrich's collection, which listed December 1907 Victor releases, that seemed to be a good starting point until our research showed that Victor was still bearing the matter in mind as late as August 1908. In all probability, this is a jobber sleeve. And I reluctantly leave it till next year for me to inspect all of the Victor envelopes of that era for correlation of the release date of the latest record or the machine picture to see when all of those envelopes came in. But we do know that following the lead of their distributor, Wurlitzer and Echo, which both introduced pocket albums in 1909, that Victor followed suit later that year with a pocketed album. The announcement said these were perfect for Red Seal customers and have become absolutely necessary to the stock of dealers where high-class records are sold. Of course, for that matter, they could be used for any record, but naturally people who pay from $3 to $5 for records have a greater desire to preserve them than those who pay 60 cents for popular numbers. That's what was written in the magazine. Even Syracuse wire racks were now being made for enveloped stock, and store shelves followed suit. Now I want to close with an announcement of what is probably the first printed envelope for a specific record. Now, by this time, some of the Europeans were providing operatic customers with envelopes which had pictures of the artists glued on and titles and numbers of their records handwritten in, and that doesn't qualify. I asked the European collectors if the Melba or Tamaño records had special sleeves, and they all said no, until I found this image. However, in the same series is this December 1908 Caruso recording, so those are not 1904 envelopes. But this one from December 1913 does qualify. To every owner of a talking machine in the United States, here is the first chance you ever had to buy a double disc record for 25 cents. One side of this sample record is a tenor solo by Henry Burr, "Good Night, Little Girl, Good Night." a record which is typical in quality of all the records in the standard 10-inch Columbia catalog. The other side of this sample record carries a short message and a little music which you will find entertaining and instructive. When you get this record on the turntable of your machine, you will know all about it, for it speaks for itself. This one record is a sample, not our own old demonstration record. The only reason why the price is set at 25 cents is because we want you to know firsthand something about the superior and guaranteed quality of the Columbia double disc record, and that they will play on your machine. Disc records are interchangeable. Now, this is on the back of what would seem to be an ordinary Victor envelope, so its existence might have escaped your notice. Check your sleeves. And just like the Marconi envelope, they did not make a larger hole to enable the large label to be read. As far as I've been able to tell, it would be another 10 years before another envelope was issued for a specific record. One last thing, a point to remember. Although I have been known to be a stickler on terminology at times, such as lacquer disc instead of acetate, do not worry about envelope or sleeve. I will not be correcting you if when you call them sleeves.
Thank you for that very revealing presentation and pushing the envelope. Yeah, that's good. I think, thank you.